On Sunday, April 5th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents an early celebration. This year marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of Billie Holiday. We will celebrate by airing a conversation that we had with Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin, professor of English and Comparative Literature and African American Studies at Columbia University. Phyllis M. Kroom, director of Being Billie, Reimagining Billie Holiday, and Nona Hendricks, who is curating a presentation at Harlem Stage titled Parallel Lives, Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf. That's Sunday, April 5th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Day and night. So funny, I feel so sad.
Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. My name's Joyce Jones. We're going to start an early Billie Holiday centennial celebration, and we're going to celebrate with a rebroadcast of a conversation with Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin. We're also going to revisit Phyllis M. Kroom of Being Billie. She's the director of that film. She's completed it, and there was a screening in Washington, D.C. earlier this evening. And so we talked a little more with her, and we also spoke to Nona Hendricks, who has a Harlem Stage event happening later this month. Stay tuned. This is indeed Sugar in My Bowl coming up now.
I want some sugar.
written by Miss Billie Holiday. Of this, meet me right after the show and I'll explain it all to you. You are me.
listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. We're going to continue to celebrate the life, the artistry of Miss Billie Holiday. And on the line, I have Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin. Hey, Miss Griffin.
Hello.
Miss Doctor. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm grateful for your participation this evening.
Glad to be here.
And to discuss Billie Holiday. Also, I need to sort of back announce what just played before we get started. I just finished playing a song from the Carmen McRae. Her birthday is April 8th, the day after Billie Holiday's. And I just played, what did I just play? Fine and Mellow, her version of Fine and Mellow from her recording of For Lady Day, Volume 1. She did two volumes, and that was fun. And before that, we heard Big Stuff. Now, I heard this song first, courtesy of the Malcolm X soundtrack. That Spike Lee did. Are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay. It's like, this is a good line. There's no noise. But you're familiar with Big Stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, that is such a great song.
It is a great song, and it doesn't get played too often.
No, it does not. And so I was surprised to hear it in the soundtrack, and
right.
I've enjoyed hearing it. You know, Jason Moran has a version of that, that it's not the same as Billie Holiday is, because Billie Holiday isn't on it, but I heard him actually do that. He tried to incorporate the original version with Billie Holiday with the live band. So he was, you know, it sounded like he was playing music from his iPod.
Right.
And this was at Garvey Park during the Charlie Parker Festival. Mm-hmm. And it just sounded strange, but it's a good song, and I love the song, and I love her singing of it.
Yes.
So that, like I said, was from the Malcolm X original soundtrack, released in 1992. And it was a good soundtrack. It had all kinds of great music. And actually, according to, not to get all in, you know, sidetracked, but Spike Lee's goal, apparently, of making that soundtrack was to be representative of radio at that time, of when it played different artists, different types of music. It wasn't just pigeonholed into, say, R&B or whatever. You know,
right.
It wasn't segregated. So
no, and he, you know, he always has great soundtracks and, mm-hmm. and also great scores.
Oh, yes, yes.
Right.
And Terrence Blanchard is usually responsible for those scores. And before that, we heard the Sugar in My Bowl theme. I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. The Nina Simone version from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967 through 1972. And from what I understand, Nina Simone was inspired by Billie Holiday, and Billie Holiday was inspired by Bessie Smith.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lineage there.
Yes, yes. So let's talk, Dr. Farah.
Okay, sounds good.
I had to clear my phone. I need to find something. It's too quiet. Gosh. But one thing I want to start off with is your book. And make sure that I have the title correctly. If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery, In Search of Billie Holiday.
Right.
How did you wind up doing that course of writing?
Well, I had always been interested in Billie Holiday, perhaps a little obsessed with her for, you know, a good part of my life, and had written various things about her, you know, stories and maybe a paper. And when I looked back at a very early version of my prospectus for my dissertation, I actually had a chapter on Billie Holiday that I'd forgotten about, and I never wrote the chapter, but I think I'd always wanted to write about her. And I just decided, I'd written my first book and was thinking about a topic for the second one, and I said, why not finally write something about Billie Holiday, about this artist who has been so important to you? And I just decided to go with that, to kind of go with that passion and follow it through.
So had you, how long did it take for you to for that journey, for to get that book together?
I mean, well, I think I started thinking about it, you know, I think it probably took me about 5 years altogether, not the writing itself, but just beginning to think about it, beginning to sort of play around with what it would look like. I mean, it's a big step from saying, I want to write a book on Billie Holiday, to really knowing what that book is going to be about.
Right.
And there were, I'd read my colleague, Robert O'Mealy's biography. I'd read all the biographies, but Robert O'Mealy, who was not at that point my colleague, I mean, I knew him, but we didn't work together. He had written a beautiful book on Billie Holiday, and I read it, and I was both inspired and disappointed, because I thought, oh, well, you know, what's the point? This book has been written, and this is the book I wish I had written. So I gave it up for a little while, and then I spent some time, I think it took me about 3 or 4 years, to figure out if I were going to write one, how would it be different from all the stuff that was already out there? And once I finally sort of decided on that, it probably took me 2 years altogether to write the whole thing.
So what did you discover about Billie Holiday as you were writing?
Well, one thing I discovered was that I was not writing a biography, actually, and that there had been a number of biographies out there, so that I wasn't necessarily contributing new biographical information, but that I was just interested in why certain myths about her continue to circulate and continue to be so influential in sort of popular culture and in the arts, and how, you know, a sort of understanding of those myths or an understanding of her icon would be sort of stand up against an understanding of her music. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, more so than discovering something new about her, I think I discovered something about those of us who listen to and consume and are inspired by her music and her life.
Well, one of the things that people seem to glom on to when they think of Billie Holiday is the excesses in her life.
Right.
And it's as though she was her excesses.
Right.
You know, as though she wasn't a great musician, or it was sort of, oh, well, she can sing, but she had these other demons,
right,
and what have you, et cetera, et cetera. How did you address that?
Well, no, you're so right. I mean, I think that, you know, it's true of Billie Holiday. I think it's true of many artists, that that people tend to obsess, you know, and sort of stick to, you're absolutely right, what you call the excesses of their lives. I think there's something that's fascinating about that. There's something that lets people sort of live vicariously through the danger, what they think of as the danger associated with certain creative artists' lives. And I also think that ultimately it's easier to focus on those things than it really is to explore and think about what it is that makes those people significant to us anyway. It's not really, or not only their excesses, it's their artistry.
Right.
There are lots of people who have excesses and don't have artistry.
This is true.
Who we don't care about at all, you know. And so I think it becomes a sort of easy way to explain a very complicated gift that people like Billie Holiday give to all of us, that certainly includes their artistry is inclusive of their excesses, but not defined by it.
Well, one of the things with regard to her artistry, she inspired so many people.
Absolutely.
I mean, the list is endless, but, you know, Carmen McRae being one.
Right.
Abby Lincoln being another. Dee Dee Bridgewater, Nina Simone,
right.
Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, the list goes on and on. You could add to that if you know of any more.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, she inspired any number of singers, certainly. She sort of defined jazz singing and popular singing,
right,
in a way. And she also inspired a number of musicians. You know, Miles Davis talks about having been inspired by her. Mal Waldron, the pianist, talks about what he learned from her in terms of phrasing. And
now, he was her pianist, right?
He was her pianist, right. Miles, you know, talks about having listened to her very closely, and I think you can hear Billie Holiday in Miles sometimes. So she inspired the singers, but also musicians, and I think, you know, a number of poets and writers. You know, the poet Toy Derricotte talks about having been inspired by her and a number of others.
And Gil Scott-Heron.
Yeah. You know, so I think that she's just one of those people who kind of give birth to artists, not only in her form, but in a number of other forms as well. You know, I think people, creative people, find her very compelling and learn a great deal from listening to her.
Right. So where did the journey of looking into investigating Billie Holiday, where has that taken you?
Well, I think it's taken me in a number of places. I mean, it's you know, it's I wrote that book in some ways, you know, out of both a sort of obsession with Billie Holiday and with my own sort of investment in some of the myths that I tried to uncover and unravel. I also wrote it at the time because I thought that it could be a kind of cautionary tale for other artists, younger artists, particularly young women, as a way of saying that there's this sort of narrative of Billie Holiday as the tragic artist and that we need to unpack that. And that also, you know, that there were mistakes that she made, and if we think of her as a kind of creative ancestor figure, she walked a path that we don't necessarily have to walk, or so we don't. You know, so younger artists don't have to walk it, that they can learn from her artistry and yet not fall prey to some of the more difficult things in her life. And when I look, that was a real desire of mine with that book. You know, I thought of it as a kind of cautionary tale. And when I look back on that now, in some ways, I feel like, you know, that as a writer, I was somewhat naive in thinking I could help people avoid the trappings with a book, you know, or that, you know, that was even possible. So I think that it's taken me on a journey both of, you know, extraordinary. You know, I had to grow a lot to write the book. I had to learn how to listen to her in ways that I had not listened to before. But I think I also had to recognize my own limitations in terms of what my larger desires were for the project when I first wrote it.
I know. We've talked about this before when you were here with Jerry Allen, how your father introduced you to the music.
Absolutely.
And on the subject of Billie Holiday, I had listened to her, and my father heard me listening to her, and he would wonder, why was I listening to her? You know, he thought, because it was so, the lyrics were so tragic.
Right.
You know, the content was so, it wasn't always, you know, downtrodden. Yeah. I mean, she wasn't always, you know, I mean, the blues isn't always, you know, something beaten.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, there were some other songs that I liked, and she was, and I guess it just seemed too mature for me to be listening to.
Yes.
But I love the way she phrased things. I just, you know, enjoyed her as her artistry, you know, her delivery.
I think, you know, it's probably something that you, without even realizing how aware you were of the artistry that you were. I mean, that you know, you're able to kind of click in without really understanding what it is you find so compelling. You know that it's not just kind of the lyric, right?
Right.
It's something about what she's doing with them.
Yeah.
And I certainly, I agree with you. I felt that way at a very young age. I think that I don't remember listening to her with my father. I remember my father talking about her. Along with a number of other musicians, and, you know, listening to some people with him. But I actually think, I'm sure he played her. He talked about her quite a bit. He talked about seeing her in person. But my father died when I was very young, and it was shortly after his death when I began to listen to his record collection, kind of on my own.
Uh-huh.
And I started listening very closely to her at that point on my own, but very similarly to you, you know, the sort of adults in my life were like, what is she listening? Why is she so interested in that particular music, you know?
I know. I think my father was just worried.
Yeah,
as
right.
A father,
is
like,
exactly.
Oh, like, be careful.
Know, what does this mean about my child?
Right.
Yes. I feel, you know, I'm sure the adults in my life felt the same way.
Right. So, did you, by the way, I'm going to be talking to the filmmakers who, they're working on the documentary.
Right.
Being Billie.
Yes.
Reimagining Billie Holiday.
Nice.
Which seems very similar to what you were doing in your book.
Yeah, I think that there are a number of us who, you know, I always feel this way about ideas. I sort of feel like none of us own ideas, you
right.
know, and that they're actually all around in the universe and that they, you know, they're there for the catching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that a lot of times I think people who are working in the same period often grab a hold of, you know, very similar ideas. And so I never felt like what I was doing in that book was, you know, unique to me,
mm-hmm.
That it was an idea that was out there,
right.
that was kind of being given to us like a gift, and whoever was open to grab it and receive it would do something interesting with it. And so I'm always happy to hear about other projects, and so this film was certainly one of them. And there was another project with BBC Three, BBC Radio, which was done shortly after, I mean, it probably was in production as I was writing my book,
mm-hmm.
Shortly after the publication, called Billie and Me. And it was a radio documentary, again, sort of reimagining Billie Holiday, trying mm-hmm. to rescue her from the myths that had dominated her story.
Right.
And eventually was turned into a concert. That was first performed in London and then has actually traveled throughout the United States. You know, all of these are sort of through different genres, through different forms,
mm-hmm.
Concerts, film, book, still very interested in the same idea of reimagining Billie Holiday.
Well, that's the thing that I like about the projects, that they are, you know, sort of rescuing Billie Holiday from the standard the standard drudgery
right.
of you know, oh, the poor downtrodden
right.
Billie, yeah. Her art suffered, and because
yes.
she suffered, she had good art and whatever, you know.
Yes, right. You know, I mean, I think it's a myth that, you know, captures a lot of artists, unfortunately,
right.
And you know, I in no way want to be so naive as to say this is a person who didn't suffer.
Oh, no.
You know, but right, but it's, you know, to claim that that is all that goes into the making of the music or of the art form, you know, seems somewhat unfair. And
yes.
They're very complex, complicated individuals who are agents in their own lives and who, you know, manage to very actively produce something quite extraordinary, and I think that that's what all of us who are engaged in these projects hope that people who observe them will come away with that message, and you know, not just look for the great downtrodden narrative.
Right. Well, Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin, first off, you have to introduce yourself better than I did. I just
no,
said your name.
You're just fine.
Well, there are things that you're associated with, as was, you know, Robert O'Mealy. You're associated
right.
with Columbia University.
I am. I'm
as
a professor at Columbia University in the departments of English and African American Studies and also the Center for Jazz Studies here at Columbia in New York.
That's it. See, that's what people need to know.
Okay. I think they just need to know that I listen to your show and enjoy it a great deal.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin, for joining Sugar in My Bowl again at such short
anytime.
Notice.
I enjoy it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to move on and talk to the filmmaker, but let's put on some music. To WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar Mabul is the name of this program, and what we just heard was, what we're listening to for the evening, the great Billie Holiday. We're still celebrating Billie Holiday's birth. And we just heard, "You Go to My Head." This is from a compilation that I have. This is a great thing about Billie Holiday. You know, there are all these compilations, and so I get to travel light. This one's called The Ultimate Collection. It is, there's like three CDs and, two DVDs? No, one DVD. Yeah, there are three. Wait. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I'm thinking of another set that I have here. This is two CDs and one DVD. And it's a nicely packaged collection. And that's where I got You Go to My Head. And before that, we heard The Very Thought of You, which is another set of Lester Young and Billie Holiday tunes. So on the line, we have filmmakers. We have director Phyllis M. Krum. I am pronouncing that correctly, right, Phyllis?
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. Who is the director of Being Billie, Reimagining Billie Holiday. Thank you so much for joining Sugar My Bowl. I am so eternally grateful. So how did this production begin?
Well, there were a confluence of factors that motivated me to write the film. But I suppose the shortest answer, and perhaps the most relevant, is the fact that my sense of Billie Holiday, as you know, as you just discussed with Professor Griffin, was shaped when I was very young, and influenced primarily by her music and the few images of her that I'd seen coming of age in a then pre-internet era. And that sense was of a beautiful, vibrant, swinging musical innovator. But, you know, and as you all just discussed, those descriptors are rarely, if ever, mentioned by the general public in conversations about Billie. And so, you know, finding myself at odds with my understanding and the seemingly prevailing notion that she was this hapless victim who created great music in spite of herself led me, you know, to seek some sort of resolution. So I did, you know, a lot of research and decided that I was initially going to write an anthology. But Dr. Griffin wrote that brilliant and beautiful, beautiful work, If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery.
Right.
And so while I was excited, and as she said, as she expressed about Dr. O'Mealy's book, you know, sort of disappointed.
Right.
And so, you know, a couple of years later, after having sat on it, I said, you know what, I can do a visual exploration. And that's what we've done.
And this film has you visiting various artists. Couple that I can think of were former Sugar My Bowl guests, Dee Dee Bridgewater and Terry Lynn Carrington.
Sure, sure. We actually spoke to 16 people, many of them musicians,
mm-hmm.
You know, and poets, and writers, scholars. But yeah, we talked to, would you like me to list them?
Please.
Okay. We spoke with Angela Davis, Kimberly Williams Crenshaw, the late Abby Lincoln,
mm-hmm.
Layla Hathaway, Tracy Morris. Lorraine Feather.
Now, that's Tracy Morris, who's the Brooklyn poet.
Yes, the Brooklyn poet, Brooklyn-based poet.
Yes.
Lorraine Feather, Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez, Carmen de Lavalade, Annie Ross, as you mentioned, Terry Lynn Carrington and Dee Dee Bridgewater, mm-hmm. Madeline Peru, Joni Mitchell, Diane Reeves, and Ricky Lee Jones.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
So how did you decide who you were going to approach?
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with the works of most of the musicians anyhow.
Right.
And you know that Billie's influence is just palpable in their work.
Right.
And so it was, you know, just clear to me that I needed to speak, you know, especially with Dee Dee Bridgewater and Madeline Peru, Ricky Lee Jones. But the other contributors in some way had either done work that addressed Billie Holiday, as an example, Angela Davis's book, Blues Legacies,
right.
And where she examined, Billie Holiday's musical legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you know, having done the research over the years, you know, these people sort of supported, you know, my sense that, you know, Billie Holiday was, again, more than this hapless victim. And so I just thought I'd bring them all together and, you know, and see what we came up with.
And this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. And I think I'm going to go to something more lengthy. Let's get into some more music. All right?
together just to write. They all congregate at an all-night high. And what they do is ooh-bop-dee-da. Old Hannah Brown from Wake Up Town gets full of corn and starts bringing them down. And that's the
for more than I ever knew. A sweeter rose, a softer sky, an April day that would not dance away. I wished on a star to throw me a beat or two. I begged of a star and asked for a dream or two. I looked for every loveliness. It all came true.
Jazz fans, this is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for April 5th. This show segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests, so you can experience them live. And this week's show is a birthday tribute to Billie Holiday, featuring vocalist Nona Hendrix and Phyllis M. Kroom, director of the new Billie Holiday documentary film Being Billie. You can catch Nona Hendrix at Harlem Stage on the City College of New York campus on April 30th and May 1st, for the Parallel Lives Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf event. See their website, harlemstage.org, for details. You'll have to wait a little longer for documentary screenings, but we'll let you know when it hits the New York City metro area, and we have more live music for you this week. We start with saxophonist Oliver Lake, whose visual art exhibit of his painted sticks is on view at the Al Jaira Center for Contemporary Art in downtown Newark, New Jersey, until May 21st. Details are at aljaira.org. That's aljaira.org. Drummer Bobby Snobra is at Zinc Bar with Gene Marlowe's Heritage Ensemble on April 8th. Zincbar.com has your details. And vocalist Catherine Russell is at City Winery on April 9th. See citywinery.com for info. Pianist Harold Mayburn's trio celebrates the release of their Afro Blue CD at Smoke on April 10th through 12th. Details are at smokejazz.com. Vocalist Catherine Russell is at the Rainbow Room on April 13th with the After Midnight Orchestra. Details are at rainbowroom.com. And vibraphonist Roy Ayers will be at Iridium on April 17th through 18th. Details are at theiridium.com. Low brass specialist on tuba and trombone Joe Daly will be at Terra Blues with Hazmat Modine on April 18th. Details are at terrablues.com. Arts for Arts month-long Earth Our World series of poetry, jazz, dance, and visual art continues at the Clemente Soto Velez Center in Manhattan. See artsforart.org for info. WBAI is media sponsor of Central Brooklyn Jazz Consortium's month-long jazz festival from April 17th to May 17th at various Brooklyn locations, and they have pre-festival events on April 10th and 11th. Details are on their website, which is their full name, centralbrooklynjazzconsortium.org, and you can find the link on our webpage or blog. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click on the link for the blog, and that's sugar, spelled S-U-G-A, inmybowl.org. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well. If you like what we do, help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can, and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the support WBAI link on our website to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday the 19th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step with their responsibilities. We need a media that strengthens democracy, not a media that strengthens the government. We need a media that enriches public discourse, not one that enriches corporations.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Safe in his eyes.
Joyce Jones, and I'm here with
Phyllis Kroom.
Phyllis Kroom, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. And for those who aren't aware, Phyllis Kroom is the director and writer of Being Billie, Reimagining Billie Holiday. It is a film. It is a Phyllis M. Kroom film. So thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we spoke, I guess it was probably almost 3 years ago, I guess it was, when you were in production. I think you were, at that point, still working on, using your phrase, sweetening the audio. So what's been happening since then?
Absolutely. It just moved into post-production. It's been an on and off process. I mean, as I also explained during our last conversation, I have been battling lung cancer since I began the project. Some months you can work, some months you can't. We're finally in the very final stages of post-production, and as you know, the film runs on Sunday.
Yay! That is
Yay. So great. I'm really, really excited about that.
And it's quite the event, too. For those in the Washington, D.C. area, the premiere screening of Being Billie at the Josephine Butler Parks Center. And you'll have special guests, one of them being a former Sugar guest, Nikki Giovanni, and the other scholar, Kimberly W. Crenshaw. And how did you wind up having Nikki Giovanni at this event?
Well, Nikki Giovanni is prominently featured in the film. And so I thought it would be a nice touch to have her come in and perhaps answer questions from audience members about some of her comments in the film. No better person to have than the person who actually authored the words, right? And the same with Kimberly Williams Crenshaw. She's also very prominently featured. I invited the ladies down, and they accepted my invitation, and here we are.
And Nikki Giovanni, as the Sugar in My Bowl listening audience would know, is does not mince with words.
Not at all. She surely does not. She has some pretty provocative and yet insightful things to say about Billie. What an asset she is to the film. Patrice Rushen is our music director, and we're still, like, at the 11th hour trying to finalize the music. What actually ended up happening is I went back and almost did a total revamp in terms of video editing of the film.
Ah.
Right, and so that extended the time as well. It's a very different version, not thematically, just aesthetically, the version that we were talking about 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. Did you decide that it would be at the Josephine Butler Parks Center?
I did. I love that venue. You know, a historic venue, very strong ties to the community. I would have preferred to have launched the film in Baltimore, but, you know, just considering varying logistics, Washington, D.C. was a more logical choice. But again, Baltimore being Billie's home, it would have been the perfect place to launch, and I'm sorry that I couldn't do it there.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the Josephine Butler Parks Center?
It's a rehabilitated mansion that's in the northwest quadrant of Washington. It overlooks Meridian Hill Park. But what happened, also, the building houses a number of not-for-profit organizations, and the Washington Park Center itself is a green-oriented organization, very community-centered, and I thought it was a good place to launch this and celebrate Billy's 100th anniversary and to launch my film.
And you know, that is something that I neglected to mention. It is the 100th birthday for Billie Holiday this year, and this is a great way to celebrate with the release of this film. And I wasn't aware at the time, but you managed to get Joni Mitchell to be involved in this.
Oh, you see? Oh, my goodness. Yes, and the incomparable Joni Mitchell.
Wow. Yes. Wow.
Yes.
How'd you score that?
You know, and she's not as inaccessible as people think, but
okay.
I'll tell you, she's a great conversationalist. I enjoy the time that I spent with her immensely.
Well, I am certainly looking forward to this Sunday and seeing Being Billie, reimagining Billie Holiday. What's the next step after the event?
Well, the next step is just to make sure that all of the music and music rights are finalized. I'm going to enter the film in as many film festivals as I can. I'm looking for distribution, but have been shopping that simultaneously. I have some pretty good prospects, so I'm excited about that. Not to leave Billie behind, because this has been a labor of love, and I'll remain with this project for as long as I need to, but it's time to move on to the next project, which I hope doesn't take as long.
Do you have your sights on something that you could share?
I do. I don't know if I want to. It's a little-known African-American actress who should be better known, and hopefully I will help her become better known. But I don't want to name her at this point. Yeah, I'm sure you know who she is, Joyce.
Okay, well, you can tell me off the air. Well, thank you so much, Phyllis M. Kroom, for joining Sugar in My Bowl again, and I look forward to seeing the film on Sunday, and I suspect everyone else who's listening are also looking forward to it. You can find out information about the film at www.beingbillie.com, Billie for Billie Holiday.
You know, if there's anyone in your listening audience who is interested in helping us find distribution, that would be great. Let me just jump in here real quick, Joyce, and say that this is a great film, and what I'm seeing is there's a new book that's about to be released by John Schwed, I think, from Columbia. And what's exciting to me about this is that I started this project 10 years ago, and my project was informed by the work of, I can't believe I haven't said this, by the work of Robert O'Meara and Sarah Jasmine Griffin, who began to start looking at Billie Holiday in a more positive light. And this new book does the very same thing. My film does the same thing. So I'm really delighted to be a part of this. Yeah, so if there's anybody out there who can help with distribution, to help us show folks that Billie was much different than the images portrayed in the popular modern media, that would be great. And you can always reach me through the website, and I'm very accessible.
And the website, once again, is www.beingbillie.com. And thank you so much, Phyllis M. Kroom, director, writer, and executive producer of Being Billie. Thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl yet again.
Thanks for having me.
Is all about. Lady sings the blues. She tells aside, nothing to hide. Now the world will know just what the blues is all about.
Well, the blues ain't nothing but a pain in your heart when you get a bad start, when you and your man have to part. I ain't gonna sit around and cry no more.
sing them no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Yeah, yeah. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. Lady sings the blues no more. No more, no more.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
My name is Nona Hendricks.
Nona Hendricks, thank you so much for giving us this time in the midst of a whirlwind of time you can't spare.
Yes, exactly. It's been a busy few days and more to come.
I suspect part of that busyness is around the Harlem stage event that you're doing, Parallel Lives, Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf.
Yes, exactly. That's where I was today, doing a rehearsal with Joey Arias. And tomorrow we're doing also the gala for the Harlem stage, which is on the 20th, and that will be with Valerie Simpson.
Oh.
But the shows are on April 30th and May 1st.
Well,
yes.
On the Parallel Lives, it's part of the celebration that Harlem Jazz Shrines Festival is celebrating 100 years of Billie Holiday?
Yes, exactly. It would be Billie's 100th birthday on April 7th.
How did you wind up curating this particular parallel?
When Harlem Stage and Pat Cruz and Brad and I were talking about things in terms of this year that I could do as a part of the artist circle for Harlem Stage, which I am a member of, one of the things that came up was the centennial and different things that they were doing around Billie's birthday. And for me, I was looking at how I could relate to the music of Billie Holiday, because the song that I've ever sort of really taken to the point of actually covering was Strange Fruit.
Yes.
Because her music is so specific and of a time and of an era of which I did not live and was not, didn't have, still so simpatico toward. But what I did is I looked, started doing more research and digging about Billie, and discovered that she and Edith Piaf were born in the same year, that they had very similar life events in terms of being born to parents when they were abandoned by a parent or both parents, both being raised in houses of prostitution, their difficulties with men and love life, not having children, having challenges with alcohol and drugs or pills and alcohol on either side, and that they both died relatively young. Billie at 44, Edith at 49. Mm-hmm. And that these two, basically street urchins, became the voices of their generation.
How did you decide who would participate in the presentations?
Well, first of all, for the Edith Piaf side, I needed people who could sing in French.
Mm.
So that definitely led me down certain paths. And having heard Edith did sing in English when she came to our American tour. For Billie Holiday, it was, you know, Joey Arias is a friend of mine, and I've known Joey since he used to work at Pierucci in the clothing store.
Wow.
Years ago. And when he was a part of Klaus Nomi's performances. So Joey was a natural for this, and I wanted other people, but I wanted to show the global reach of their voices, not only that they were parallel in some of the events in their lives, but that the effect and the vast reach of these two basically nobodies who became influential to filmmakers, sculptors, painters, writers, dancers, choreographers around the world.
Yes.
And so Women of the World, an a cappella group from Boston, was my next choice, because there's a Japanese member, an African member, an Indian member, and an Italian member. And they could represent a lot of the areas that people who were influenced by Billie Holiday or Edith Piaf would come from. And then Tamar Kali, who does an amazing version of La Vie en Rose and speaks in French. And this is to show an African-American woman singing in French the songs of Piaf, as well as a Billie Holiday song. And then there's Lisa Jesse Peterson, who I think is an amazing presence and poet, who will be the narrator and will also help link to some of her poetic writing, and using quotes and some texts from James Baldwin.
Oh.
Yes, because he was in Harlem at the time of Billie Holiday. There are quotes from him about Billie. And then he was an expatriate in France for 27 years. So there's that French connection with him.
And who is Etienne?
Etienne Cedric is my keyboard player, and he's the MD for the show.
Okay. That's a musical director for people who
musical director. And just, doing a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. Will Calhoun from Living Color playing drums.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And Ken Clark, the bassist, is playing bass.
Okay.
And we will have a small violin quartet, as well as Adaku, the dancer, is a piece that's really just an instrumental piece with spoken word and poetry that's being performed.
This is going to be amazing. It sounds like definitely something I wouldn't want to miss.
Well, we're trying to cover, to show the influence, the breadth of which these two artists have influenced art until this day.
I noticed that several of the artists, vocalists, and poets, Lisa Jesse Peterson, was involved in the Women and Jazz series in the past as well.
Yes, yes.
Which ended in the Schomburg.
Yes, there are women who have been working in terms of exploring all these different areas of music, poetry, film, in very creative ways, and working with a lot of the women artists in New York, from Toshi Reagan to Mark Redbone, myself, and many others.
And congratulations on having been honored at that festival this year. That was amazing. That was wonderful.
It was beautiful. It was a really beautiful night, and I thank Toshi,
yeah,
a little musical child,
yes,
for, honoring me in such a way, and all the other women who were part of it, and the Schomburg.
Indeed. And anybody who missed that this year, shame on you. So you should come to Harlem Stage. You're going to be singing as well that night, yes?
Yes, yes, I am. Both nights.
Excellent.
Yes.
So that's April 30th and May 1st at Harlem Stage.
Exactly.
People can go to harlemstage.org for tickets. Go under the events, and you will act now. Do not wait, because things will be sold out before you know it.
Yes, it goes quickly, and I think they're sort of over halfway sold already.
Yay, see?
Get your tickets.
Yes. Is there anything else you want to share about the presentation that we may not have touched on?
I hope I haven't missed any of the people who are going to be a part of it.
Well, thank you so much, Nona Hendricks, for visiting Sugar in My Bowl again with a wonderful event for April 30th and May 1st.
So the address is 134-135th and Convent, uptown.
And you can go to harlemstage.org for all information. 7:30, both nights, mm-hmm. April 30th and May 1st. It's Harlem Stage Gatehouse, 150 Convent Avenue at West 135th Street, here in New York City, in Harlem. Thank you so much, Nona Hendricks. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Once I was young, yesterday perhaps, danced with Jim and Paul and kissed some other chaps. Once I was young, but never was naive. I thought I had a trick or two up my imaginary sleeve, and now I know I was naive. I didn't know what time it was. Then I met you. What a lovely time it was. How sublime it was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May was. be alive, to be young, to be mad, to be yours alone. Grand to see your face, hear your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year was. Life was no prize. I wanted love, and here it was, shining out of your eyes. I'm wise, and I know what time it is now.
WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. And I should probably let you know what you've been listening to thus far. What you just heard was I Didn't Know What Time It Was, a lovely Rodgers and Hart tune that has, of course, Billie Holiday on vocals, Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Ben Webster on tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rowles on piano, Bonnie Kessler on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Alvin Stoller on drums. And before that, we heard Dee Dee Bridgewater. Dee Dee Bridgewater from Eleanor Fagan to Billy with Love from Dee Dee Bridgewater. It is the Grammy-winning Eleanor Fagan, 1915 through 1959, to Billy with Love from Dee Dee Bridgewater. Yes, the Grammy-winning Dee Dee Bridgewater. And that, and we heard from there, Lady Sings the Blues, a very interesting arrangement of Lady Sings the Blues. And on and the lineup for that, actually the arrangements are by Edsel Gomez, who is on piano. Of course, vocals Dee Dee Bridgewater. Christian McBride on bass and Lewis Nash on drums. And we have a tenor sax solo by James Carter. That man can get down, actually. You know, they all can. But that arrangement, Edsel Gomez. Before that, we heard I Must Have That Man. And that was, actually, that and I Didn't Know What Time It Was is from the other box set I was referencing. It is a 6-CD, the complete Verve Studio Master Takes. It's a massive thing. I got it some time ago when I used to be in a place where I could get those lovely things. And I'm grateful to have it. It is helping me travel light. And I was going to play that, but I wound up playing instead. Actually, first let me get back to I Didn't Know What Time It Was. Did I tell you what that line? Yes, I did. I Must Have That Man. The lineup on there was, of course, Billie Holiday vocals, Charlie Shaver's trumpet, Tony Scott clarinet, Paul Kinichet. 212-209-2900. You can give me a call once we put on a song, and you can let me know what that, what his last name, how it's pronounced, because I'm sure somebody will know how. He was on tenor saxophone, Paul Kinichet. And Wynton Kelly on piano, Kenny Burrell on guitar, Aaron Bell on bass, and Lenny McBrown on drums. And that was from a 1956 release of Lady Sings the Blues, but it is included in this lovely, lovely, massive box set, the complete Verve Studio Master Takes. And let's see, before that we heard I Wished on the Moon, and yeah, that has Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Ben Webster on tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rawls on piano, Barney Kessler on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Alvin Stoller on drums. Actually, a very similar lineup as I Didn't Know What Time It Was. And let's see, before that, we heard from Abby Sings Billy, Pigfoot and a Bottle of Beer. Abby Sings Billy was actually two different volumes of, but they are now one volume. Well, not one volume. They're two CDs in one lovely set, and it's called Abby Sings Abby. They sell the two together these days. And it's Abby Lincoln on vocal, Harold Vick on tenor saxophone, James Wideman on piano, Tarek Shaw on bass, and Mark Johnston on drums. And let's see, before that, we had a conversation with Phyllis M. Coombs and the director, and Patricia Raspberry, the producer of Being Billy, Reimagining Billie Holiday. And the website to find out more about that film, if you missed the exchange, is www.beingbillie.com. Find out more about that. Find out how you can help, because they still need help to with the audio portion of the film. Fingers crossed, the film should be available in July, the beginning of July. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that at festivals, and find out how we can get it in New York. All right. Let's see. Let's see. What do I have coming up here? Why don't I go here next? Stay tuned.
You're mean to me. Why must you be mean to me? Gee, honey, it seems that you'd love to see me cry. Each night when you say you're gonna phone and you don't leave me, here am I all alone, singing the blues and crying. You treat me coldly each day in the year. You always scold me whenever somebody's near.
Carmen McRae. Carmen McRae from her Lady Day volumes. They're not sold together. This was Mean to Me from Volume 2 for Lady Day, Carmen McRae. The birthday lady, yesterday was her birthday, the 8th, and Billie Holiday's birthday was the 7th. So I'd like to thank, oh my gosh, I should have written his name. How could I forget? Okay, so I've been given Paul Quinichet. I've been given Paul Quinichet. And between the two, you work it out. But somebody, a shy caller, told me that Paul Quinichet was, or Paul Quinichet was called, Daryl from the Midwest told me Quinichet. The shy caller told me that Paul Quinichet was called the vice president because he sounded a lot like Lester Young. But the first person to tell me was Kwame Brathwaite, the photographer, the great Kwame Brathwaite, who was listening to Sugar in My Bowl. I feel so honored. And thank you, everybody else, for your information. Mean to Me, told you that. Oh, yes, on Mean to Me, that was Carmen McRae, of course, on lead vocals. Zoot Sims on tenor sax. Marshall Atwell on piano. John Leftwich on bass. And Donald Bailey on drums.
For a girl that's
sparkle for Christmas, a diamond ring, a big Cadillac car, and everything. It's love that makes me treat you the way I do. Gee, baby, ain't I good to you? of hot tomatoes, but you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. A fine romance you won't Nessa, a fine romance you won't wrestle. I might as well play bridge with my old maid aunts. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine one of those crazy men, one of those bells that now and then ring. Yes, one of those things. It was just one of those nights, just one of those fabulous flights, a trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it, when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot, not to cool down. So goodbye, dear and amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. You know, I can't have music playing under me because it's Billie Holiday. And it'd just be wrong. So what we just heard just then was just one of those things. The Cole Porter tune. That was Billie Holiday on vocals, of course. Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet. Ben Webster on tenor saxophone. Jimmy Rowles on piano. Barney Kessel, yes, I said it right this time, Barney Kessel. I made the mistake. I said Barney Kessler. I know Barney Kessel. I got it. Barney Kessel, thank you, everyone. And on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, Alvin Stoller on drums. And before that, we heard A Fine Romance. A Fine Romance. You know, a lot of the Billie Holiday selections from within the midnight hour, past the midnight hour, are from a lovely 6-CD box set, the Complete Verve Studio Master Takes. And so I didn't have to bring as many as I probably would have had to. But A Fine Romance is from that collection. And we have Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet, Benny Carter on alto saxophone, Jimmy Rowles on piano and celeste, Barney Kessel on guitar, John Simmons on bass, and Larry Bunker on drums. Before that, we heard G Baby Ain't I Good to You. And that is, let's see, who do we have on the lineup there? Coming up next will be La Nueva Alternativa. I've been watching them congregate out front. So they'll be on time. Okay, what do we have here? It is G Baby Ain't I Good to You. And that lineup is, oh, come on, here we go. Harry Sweets Edison on trumpet. Billie Holiday on vocals. Ben Webster, tenor saxophone, Jimmy Rowles on piano, Barney Kessel on guitar, Red Mitchell on bass, and Larry Bunker on drums. I guess this sort of period with the selections that I've played had a similar lineup, but with slight changes. Before that, we heard Mean to Me. That was Carmen McRae from her Lady Day tribute for Lady Day. This is from Volume 2, and on that we have Carmen McRae on vocals, Zoot Sims, tenor sax, Marshall Atwell on piano, and John Leftwich on bass, Donald Bailey on drums. And we're going to go out of here to get ready for La Nueva Alternativa. I've had a little fun. I have. This has been really nice. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones. You have been listening to Sugar in My Bowl. Coming up next, La Nueva Alternativa. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Stay tuned.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.